Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the 30-Minute Cocktail Hour with Randy Gordon, only on LA Talk Radio.
The stats, math figures, poll results, and or other facts may be incorrect as the host may be too buzzed or drunk to intelligently refer to them.
Welcome, everybody, once again to the 30-Minute Cocktail Hour. I am your host, Randy Gordon. Beautiful Southern California night, once again. And tonight, I got a guest. That's right, I'm not by myself. Yeah, that's usually what I am. I'm just spewing shit that comes out of my mind every time I'm here. But Ed Shane.
That's correct.
But not spelled differently.
Yeah, it's spelled S-C-H-O-E-N, and yes. Most people get it wrong.
Yeah, I don't. That's weird. Yeah, but that's all right. That's why I asked you. I was like, because I always
pronounce
it wrong.
Yeah, but you did. You got it right, though. You remembered. I think you remembered because we have a past.
That's right. That sounds so sordid. And we have a past. It's not what you're thinking, people. All right, it's not what you're thinking. But yeah, I've known Ed for quite a while. I would say
probably seven years.
At least more than 7 years.
Has it been a little more than seven, huh?
Yeah. I mean, it's not that we've hung out all the time, but yeah, I've known you for a long time. And that's funny because I know you as the doing the improv and all that kind of stuff,
yep.
But you've ventured out in other things. Were you, before that, were you a carpenter and stuff by trade? Is that what you
did? Yeah, I'm 30 years in the business of working on houses. So
okay.
Yeah, right now I'm a general contractor out here in California.
Oh, okay. For the long time, you've been investing in yourself. And that's what you're going to be here.
Yes, so we're here talking about some investments. And I've been watching the stock market since I was a little kid, actually.
Oh, really?
But I started investing right around the ripe age of 18 or 19, and I'm close to 50 now, so I've got nearly 30 years in.
Wow.
But now I've never had enough money to, you know, consistently invest all the time because,
right.
You know, you fall in good times, bad times, whatever. But
you're not
lately,
Warren Buffett is what you're saying?
Well, no, not even close to Warren Buffett.
But yeah, but so you're, because you have a new podcast called Ed's Got Your Money.
Ed's Got My Money.
Or Got's My Money.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Well,
that's right.
He's got your money, people. I don't know you, so he's got your money. But Ed's Got My Money podcast. It's on iTunes, and we'll give everybody information a little bit about all that. We're going to talk about, you also have a Facebook page called Pot Stocks, because those are big now. We're going to talk about pot stocks. We'll
get
all into that. And always when I have a guest, as it is a 30-minute cocktail hour, so we have cocktails and we discuss things. And I always say, what do you want to drink? And so Ed said, well, I have a margarita, but it's too close to, Cinco de Mayo. So I'm going to save that to, like, I'm going to have tequila probably next week because we're close to Cinco de Mayo. So he's like, margarita or beer? Very specific on beer. So I was at the grocery store and I was walking through and you know what got me? Because as a Bears fan and you're a Midwest guy, so all I could think of was the Vikings when I saw this.
Got it, yeah.
So that's what I thought. It's Einstock. And they're an Icelandic brewery, and they're like 60 miles from the Arctic Circle.
Really?
That's yeah, cool. Yeah. So they're expanding in like 16 states. So they're not all the way out in the United States. You want to hear? You want to try this one?
Yeah,
this
I've already tried the first one. It's gone.
So, drink some of this one. All right, there we go. So the first one we tried is their white ale, which is made with coriander and orange peel and. Well, I tell you, it's not bad. It's not. I can taste a little of that orange peel in there.
I like it.
Yeah, it's a little.
I'm not a big lager fan, but
This is ale.
Or the ale or lager? I'm not really a big fan of.
What's your go-to beer?
I'm from St. Louis, so I love Budweiser.
Well, yeah, that's the land of Budweiser. That's what I used to live there.
Yep.
Budweiser's a lager. It is.
Really?
Yeah, Budweiser's a lager.
Wow, I never knew that. See, I was...
You didn't know that?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, Budweiser's a lager. So.
I never thought of it that way. I always thought of it as just plain old simple beer.
Well, and I think that's what most Americans, when they think of beer, it's a lager. any of, like, you know, Miller's or Miller Lights or any of those kind of things. Those are, or Pabst or something like that.
Well,
those are, yeah, those are all. Well,
you see how much you have to teach me here.
See,
this is great. I'm already learning.
What did you think of the first one? Did you like it?
I did like it. It didn't get a it didn't have a bad aftertaste, and it went down smooth, I thought. So that's the most important thing.
Now, yeah, that's the difference. See, now trying this. The Arctic Pale Ale is very much a pale ale. It's very floral. It's got a lot of those hoppy notes in it, I think, more so than the
other
one.
Yeah, it's a little
does.
More potent, I can for me.
Yeah, it's the hoppiness that you're tasting, the flowers, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I like the first. I honestly like the first one better.
Well, because I think the first one's closer to a lager.
There you go.
And that's why it doesn't have the...
My go-to.
That ale, that's what you don't like. See, I'm the same way. Like, I don't like the Indian Pale Ales. I don't like a lot of these really overly hoppy beers, and sometimes you just want a nice summertime beer, you know, just like what we were thinking about, like a Budweiser or something like that. Those are always my go-to. But yeah, so I saw this and I thought, well, this is interesting. So I looked them up.
So is this your first time drinking this beer then?
Yeah, yeah. Correct? That's what I always do.
That's great. So you try to choose something that you've never had? Is that
that's
idea?
Usually what I try to do is I grab something I've never had before. And when I used to do the podcast years ago, I always got stuck drinking the crap. we would do like tequila and I'd find some really gross tequila or something like that. Like I did whiskey, I did Red Stag, which is the grossest shit in the world. And Yeah. So I was like the guinea pig, and Scott got to drink all the good stuff.
Well, there's so many beers to choose from nowadays.
Well, that's the thing.
Like
nowadays,
crazy.
It's huge. Like, I mean, all these
everybody's
craft
making
brewers.
It.
And
just like everybody's making podcasts, right?
I know, exactly. Right? That's what I was thinking, too, when I put this
in. Funny.
Like 5 or 6 years ago when we were doing this, it was, you know, when I first did this.
It was kind of the beginning,
yeah,
huh?
Yeah, I mean,
or when it was
Adam
getting...
Carolla was out there, and he was doing his thing, but it wasn't like it is now. Now I think it's I don't want to say overly saturated, but I think everybody's got a podcast, and so to weed through all those you know, kind of things, and mine is it's comedy and common sense and drinking, so that's pretty much
that's what we want. We want common sense,
yeah, exactly,
which is so uncommon these days.
That is very true, and that's what I like to try to bring back to America, as we've all gone off our fucking rockers.
Yep,
with
everything's a issue.
isn't like everything, like,
blame and shame, baby,
and everything's salacious nowadays. And I was like last podcast was all about the news is dead, because nowadays the news is like tabloid journalism. It's and they're going to put whatever they want in there to get you to click.
Yeah, no
usually,
doubt.
And usually it's Trump involved.
It's terrible. Yeah, it's been overheated with that. And you know what they say about people you try to knock down, the harder you hit them, and they don't go down, they just rise a lot stronger. And if you want to destroy Trump, you leave him alone and you ignore him.
Exactly.
He'll destroy himself. That's what I think.
Right.
So.
Right. I mean, the more you, it's like feeding a fire.
Yes.
Just let it die down.
If you really hate him and you want to destroy him, so let him be.
Well, speaking of Trump, so once he got elected, stock market goes nuts. Right.
Well technically, first day when they saw that, it was actually the futures market. Mm-hmm. It was down 800 or 900 points, but by the end of the day, it was up.
Right. That's what I know.
Yeah. Crazy, man.
I remember, and everybody was talking, saying, "Oh, he's going to kill the market,"
right,
and all
yes.
this other kind of stuff. And then within the week, it was up 500 points.
Yeah.
And then it's up, and I think it went from, I want to say, 18,000 up to 26.
It
The year and a half.
Yeah.
It's,
I mean,
once it hit,
I think it hit 20.
When it hits 26. It sort of went, and now it's
starting to have some problems.
Between 24 and 26, it stayed. It'll either be up 400 or down 500. It's up for, you know what I mean?
You know, today was kind of a pivotal day, because I watch it every day, probably, you know, periodically during the day and stuff. And today was kind of a pivotal day. I mean, it was
down 500 at one point.
Yeah, it was down 600 at one point, but the key level that I was like concerned of is once it hit below 24K, like it was nothing, you know, 24,000, it was 23 something. That just sent my alert signals up, my mental alert signals up, and say, oh my gosh, we're probably gonna drift downward from here, I think, before we get a reset.
You think so? You don't think it's sort of reset and stabled right now between the two?
I thought it did, but this recent week.
Right.
Now, a lot of times.
I feel like it's sort of, it's floating right now. So, like, I don't think it's such a tragedy. It's not such a thing where you need to, like, get all your money out.
No, you know, I don't think that at all. Not at all. But I play the market, so I'm constantly trying. So, see, there's legs that are up or legs that are down. And right now...
Legs in what regard is that? Like, what's a leg?
Oh, a leg is just the move down and then up. Okay. So the trend. So technically, if you're looking at a chart, mm-hmm. you hit like a high of 10, and it's back down to 9, and then when it starts to rally again, it goes up to 12, and then back down to 11. So that's an up leg, but then it's the reverse.
Are you looking at days, or are you looking at five, like a 5-day? Or
I look at all of the charts.
Are the 30-day?
The daily charts, the weekly charts, and the monthly charts, even 6 months out.
Okay.
Yeah, because it can give you some sense of what's going on.
Well, and it's interesting to see which ones, depending on what was spoken about, either coming from the White House or coming from the Fed or whatever, how it goes from either it'll affect, like, the Amazon thing was going on, affects the tech side.
Yep.
Or, like, oil, I think, is back down again a little bit right now.
Up? It's up higher than it has been for a while.
Right.
Definitely.
But I think it's interesting to me how... just what is spoken, all of a sudden, it makes that big change in the tech market or in box stores or whatever the case may be. It's interesting.
And if you follow it as much as I do, you realize that almost no matter what you think mm-hmm. should happen, it doesn't always.
Well,
good news, you can have the greatest news in the world and the stock will tank. And so you have to understand where the market is at the moment and how the sentiment is, how people are feeling, the confidence and stuff like that.
Wasn't that the thing about the year and a half that we've been in this weird market so far? It's thrown everybody for a loop. They don't know how to...
You're afraid to be out.
The normal, whatever you want to put onto the analytics or whatever, is sort of out the window because it's not doing what it's supposed to do. According to
it's forever,
past models, I should say.
It's forever evolving. You got to remember that every year new technology comes out. And when, for instance, back when I first started trading, it used to cost $100 just to make a trade. And then you had a spread with the stock, so you lost money. It's like it was like buying a car, right? When you drove it off the lot, you already were down 15-20%. Nowadays, you can buy for some companies let you buy for nothing because they sell your information. But I still use like Ameritrade.
Well, that was one of my questions I wanted to ask you. So out of all the people, Scottrade, Ameritrade, and I have a friend of mine who was working for when they got bought up. He was working for Scottrade. They just got bought up.
Gotcha. They just recently got bought up by TD Ameritrade. Yeah.
Yeah. And so the question is, which one is probably the cheapest and the better one with the best interface?
Well, I'm a little biased only because I've been using Ameritrade for the 30, you know, almost the
oh, you've exclusively for the last 30 years?
Yeah. And I've tried Scottrade, interestingly mm-hmm. enough, because my fiance was in Scottrade, and it was just so hard to navigate. But then they merged, so now, you know, hey,
oh, so they, so their interface to do the trades and stuff was just really too convoluted to go
definitely
through?
Set up differently. And then one thing that Scottrade did that Ameritrade did not is there's these hidden fees. When you're buying some of the smaller companies, you think you're going to get the trade for what, like, for instance, Ameritrade is down to $6.95 a trade, but that doesn't matter how many shares you buy or what company buy.
It's per transaction.
Per transaction, but Scottrade, you go and buy some of these little penny stocks, next thing you know, you're paying $15-$20 for it.
Is it because they're putting a percentage on top of the
I'm not sure what number? Their reason is for that, but
like
that
if you go
really
over
deters
if you
from,
go over 100 shares, they're going to ding you with like 5% or whatever.
It may be something along those lines. But they don't do that for the bigger companies.
Have you ever done the E-Trade?
They're very similar. They were very similar to Ameritrade. Are they still? I guess they're still.
I think they're still out there.
Right?
I don't know. Ameritrade seems to be the big one. Who's the one that? Who's the one that they always see with the? Is it Schwab? Where they're like. You know, the commercials were like, can you do this and this and, you know, like, it's only $6.95 and this and there's no commission and whatever. You know what I'm talking about? The commercials?
I used to see a lot of them, but of course, you know, we skip through commercials nowadays. So we just kind of...
It's very true.
You don't even know what the heck you're looking at anymore. It's just like...
Ameritrade is...
That's my go-to because they've always treated me right and there's no hidden, like, agenda.
So $7 a trade.
Yeah, $7 a trade.
But that can add up if you're doing multiple trades on a day or in a week.
It can, but think about, like I said, even discount brokers back when I first started in the 90s, man, were sometimes it was $100. And
that's a lot if you're only trading $1,000 like, worth of stuff.
Yeah, so you didn't get – so that's what has changed the way the market is moves nowadays because of the cheap commission rates.
Well, it and really now they also have – and that was one of the complaints. I was watching Fox Business News, and they were talking about when there was a – I think it was like a thousand percent that the stock market – they were talking about how there were bots that they have – they have these trading bots mm-hmm. that will – trade automatic within yes. milliseconds.
Electronics.
Yeah, and yeah. that was throwing everything off. And I remember Charles Payne. I've watched him.
Yeah,
and
Charles.
And he was saying, "Don't worry, this is just it's a bot thing. This is not people reacting. That's the thing. It's not people. It's a machine reacting because of the way the technology is set
yeah.
up."
Yeah, and I, you know, a lot of day traders. I don't consider myself a day trader. I consider it's more of
what's the difference?
A day trader is somebody that gets to sit in front of their screens all day long, watching every damn thing go on, and have these.
So you say you have a life, is what you're saying?
Well, I have to work to have a life. My 40-hour a week construction job, or
yeah,
my,
right.
you know, my company.
Yeah,
and so when you're these guys got these algorithms going on, and yeah. so but you can. Actually, people like myself can actually that have a different strategy can actually use that knowledge to their advantage, and that's what I do. That's what, part of our right. strategy that we're talking about with Ed's Got
so
My Money.
So when you got Ed's Got My Money, which was the concept, I think, was you were going to steal your friend's money.
Yeah. So
no, which means you're going to they don't know shit about investing.
Right.
And you've been investing for 30 years, and you said, "Give me $500 a piece."
Yeah, and they kind of say, "Hey, we're going to give you our $500 a piece." I didn't even ask for it.
Oh, you didn't ask for it? Okay.
So, of course, you know, we had them. So what we did is we took
But
them from
what was the sales pitch? Well, now, what were they expecting in return, though?
It was interesting. If you on episode one, they kind of asked me, "How much are we going to make on this?" So we kind of go over that. And, yeah. you know, it's like, what if I went to make $2,000? And I said, "Well, you need to go bet it on a horse and get lucky."
Do they not know the old adage from Jesus who said, "You can teach a man to fish for a life. You know, you can give a man
give
a fish
him
a,
exactly,
to eat one day,
exactly.
or teach him how to fish for a lifetime." Right.
Yeah.
So you're supposed to be teaching them.
So
how
well,
to
at
trade,
the beginning, right? however, it was going to be as if I was just going to take their money and make the money without them doing it. But
right.
we changed the format really quick, and what I even did was throw in
because otherwise you're just working for them.
Yeah. So I didn't do well. Not only that, but the truth is, we want to teach people who follow, you know, who watch our podcast.
That's the whole point of the podcast.
Exactly. To
get how to do it.
To number one, how to get started investing, mm-hmm. and then to come up with a strategy, because I don't really want to give investment advice per se, like buy
exactly.
this.
I think it's more about
teach them
like
how they can buy the stock they're interested in,
the
or
process,
to even find it. Yes,
and
exactly.
how to watch out for trends and this and
yes,
that sort
exactly.
of thing. And I think that's what's really good about the podcast is it's not because there's a lot of podcasts about investing and this, but you have to sort of know. But if you're a novice, you're like me. I don't know shit about the market. I mean, I know some because I've been watching all that kind of stuff. But I wouldn't, you know, I don't know a lot about it. But I think it's great to sort of walk people through.
Yes.
The process.
If you have an understanding of some of the internals of how it works right. and things, it'll make you a lot more confident on.
And is it a good idea to like, you know, say, okay, why don't you start with 300, and just use that as a basis, 300 that you literally could walk out and lose in the street. Like,
right.
you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like you're not going to, you have $300 to invest, and then use that as your trial thing for the next 6 months.
Yes,
to like, to
absolutely. And that's what we're doing with the two guys,
right.
Dave Fickus and Jonesy. They're both comedians. And
they don't know anything about money.
No, they don't know shit. As a matter of fact, David brought me a bottle of
they don't
his
make
change.
And
so we had to, and he wouldn't even take it to CoinStar because he didn't want to lose any of it.
He didn't want to lose the 11,
yeah,
11
so,
cents a dollar.
Oh, God. I think it's at 8, even 8 cents. I was like, okay. But
no, it's 11 cents now. They started at 8.
Oh, it's
they
at
started
11,
at 7.5.
Well, somebody told me there were actually a lot. If you would get a certain voucher for a certain company,
well,
that they would just waive it because I guess they get.
Well,
it
they'll
the
do.
Company.
They'll waive it for charities. But
oh,
some
yeah,
banks,
okay.
like First Entertainment Credit Union, I know that you can put your coins in there, and if you're depositing it, they give you all the money.
Gotcha.
So you, I mean, you're not losing your 11 cents a dollar. But yeah, comedians, you know, so, he's so, not, they're not rich. So, but yeah.
No,
so
they, but what you were talking about is just taking a little money, and that's what they're doing. So right. these guys are going to learn some valuable.
And people listening can learn
and
through
they
them.
They will, because we're right. we're going through all of the process, everything from how to get started online, how to the right way to make an order so you don't mess up, the way to have an exit strategy.
Is that easy to do, though, to mess up an order?
It can be if you have. It can be, yeah. You can
click at the wrong time,
instance,
you
could,
and you're screwed.
You could put the wrong sell order in, or if you don't put limit orders and stuff like that, you can get a stock that for 20% higher than it's going on because you didn't, you know, take the.
Oh, so you want to limit it to, like, okay, if it goes up 15%, then this is then sell.
Well, yeah, you can right. Like, for instance,
give an example.
There's a good till cancel. Almost, which is a really good advice, is anytime you buy a stock, you want to use the good till canceled and the limit order. And what that does is, for instance, if I'm buying a, especially with the small companies like penny stocks and stuff, mm-hmm. if you're buying a penny stock, you want the good till cancel order on, because you may only get part of it, and you don't want to have to only end up with a few shares and then have to pay the commission on it and not ever get the other ones without right. having some time for that to have to execute.
Oh, I see.
And then the limit order is if you say you want to buy it at 20 cents or lower. So the limit, it limits it at 20. If you get the purchase, it'll be 20 cents or it will be lower than the
So once it
cents.
Goes up to like 25, you're not going to get any of that stuff. It's going to stop.
Well, what I'm saying is if you're trying to hit a bottom, and it's like, for instance, if it hits 19 cents, then it should have triggered your 20 cents automatically. Okay. Sometimes you'll get a half a cent.
And you just sort of let that go automatically and do its thing.
Yeah, for instance, I'm giving these guys price targets on stocks that I believe are going to, what we call, do a breakup, you know. And so I'm a very good...
Oh, you're waiting for the companies to break up.
No, we're waiting for the investors to break up. So it's real cool because a lot of stocks will sit there and consolidate, kind of flatline for a long time, mm-hmm. and then they start to get a little bit active. But almost always before they actually make a move up, they tend to test going down. And what it does, it gets rid of all the weak hands.
Oh,
so
I
that's
see.
What I look
so
for.
So they're clearing out the people.
They're clearing out all the weak hands, all the speculators, or people that can't stomach a loss. Okay?
So and you got to ride that so when it's a dollar a share, they're going to split and it's going to go
no. See, here's the thing.
And you can double the share?
You know about those computer trades we talk about. A lot of people already have stops on. And what a stop is if, for instance, they bought a stock for a buck, they don't want it to go below 80 cents or they want out.
Right.
So what happens is they put all these people put these stops on, and that's what triggers a sell-off. So we're there to take to rebound. We're there for the rebound, and I call it the fling trade, you know.
Is that your own? Did you trademark that?
Not yet. But
that's fling trade.
But it is. It's a fling right. trade because all we're trying to do is be the rebound for a short period and make 15, 20% really quick, and that's what we've been doing with some of the trades.
But you also, I mean, to have a good portfolio, don't you have to have long-term things like some money markets and some,
well,
you know,
not I mean, if you have time on your hands, I mean, let's say, for instance, I did some math and I told the guys, I said, what if I took that $500 and was able to make one trade a month for 10%, all right,
okay,
and then we did that every month and for a compound that same $500 without ever adding any money. I did the math, and in 7 years before taxes, I can doing that, it would be worth $1 million. That's only 7 years. Don't get me wrong, that's only $500 investment. Do
wow.
the math, it's there. That's the power of compounding. So I'm a big math guy.
So you're trying to do it that way instead of doing the long haul mutual fund.
But it is a long haul. It's just a
strategy.
Yeah,
but there's a lot of work involved in that long haul. Instead of just like putting, say, 10 grand in a mutual fund and letting it sit there.
Yeah, but what you need to know then is that most money managers, the majority of them, there's only like about 5% of them that beat the averages. Did you know that?
No,
it's amazing on a consistent basis. Oh. So what we're saying here is, why even hire a money manager if you can't find that 5% guy and just buy the ETFs?
Well, we'll see in 7 years with your podcast if
indexes.
It's $1 million for this
guy. That's what's going to happen right in front of you guys' eyes. It's going to unfold.
Right.
Is that I'm going to be that guy that turns my $25,000 portfolio into $1 million in the next couple of years with pot stocks. That's my belief.
Well, that's what I want to talk about too, is these pot stocks. And the thing about pot stocks, and I follow your page, is, it seems to me, though, they're slightly volatile. They're slightly, they're a little bit unbalanced in a sense, where
they
can go all over the place. There's such huge spikes
and, that's
and lows, and
where the strategy that I've come up with.
But people love them because they're 15 cents, 20 cents, I mean, a dollar.
You know why they love them? Because it's a new growth industry.
Yeah, but part of my issue with pot stocks is that the feds still aren't, there with the legalization. So
correct.
That causes a problem in the volatility in the stocks. Because it's such a weird, there's no stability in the marketplace in a sense.
Yep.
And I remember I was listening to talk radio, actually, and they were talking to a woman who was doing research on these pot stocks and what, not just pot owners, because there's distributors, there's people that just do CBDs, there's people that do all kinds of stuff. And the problem is because
hydroponics.
But the
cultivation,
the companies that sell it and distribute it. With the feds not regulating, they can't put their money in an FDIC bank.
Right, and then there's...
So they have stash houses of millions of dollars up and down California.
But...
And they're doing these buys with cash. And they're even in Nevada now, they're taking $1 million in the casino, getting chips, playing, and maybe losing their 10%.
Right.
And then getting a check from the casino and depositing the check in the bank.
And that's where blockchain and the cryptocurrencies are coming in to play right now.
Well, and that's another thing that's...
So that's what's going to force the feds, though, Randy. You get what I'm saying? So it's inevitable that...
Bitcoin is going to...
No, I wouldn't say Bitcoin, but their blockchain, there's a lot of other ones. Like one of the stocks that I've invested in before, Gohee, which please don't go out and invest in it on my word, but
right.
I just played it.
How do you spell that?
It's the ticker symbol, and that's what we go over to, is teaching people about the ticker symbol.
Yeah, but what is the ticker symbol then?
The ticker symbol is G-O-H-E, Gohee.
Oh, G-O-H-E.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah. And I just got done buying some more of that. I bought
And they're a blockchain, they're like Bitcoin.
They're a company that is kind of like finding a way to the loopholes to finance the pot companies and do their banking for them. So that's another area.
So they're going
to
be the pot industry bankers.
They're one of them. Believe me, there's a lot of them. So there's a lot of people doing it. But what my point is that you cannot stop what's coming. So the feds have to eventually legalize it and start banking on it themselves. And it's going to happen. I mean, I don't know if it's...
I think it's going to be 5 years before that
You think
happens.
It's five? I think it's sooner than I think.
I think it's going to be 5 years. I think it's going to depend who's in the White House.
But I think it could be five. Don't get me wrong.
I think it's still one of those taboo things. If it's on, it depends. Like I said, depending on who's in the White House and who's controlling the Senate and the House.
Yeah.
But also,
well, you know who I think's really stopping it, and I honestly believe this, and I think it's Big Pharma. I mean, that's the reason.
Of course, they
just are going to lose their butts if this.
Oh
thing,
yeah. Because of the opioid sales
are
going down.
Oh, man, it's horrible.
Tremendously.
I mean, I know so many people are dying of opioids, man. I'm just sad for it. I'm not kidding.
But
it's terrible.
That's the situation. But maybe if you get to 30 states, do you know what I mean? Like, if 30 states at some point have legalized it
recreationally.
Yeah,
so you're thinking more states need to...
Yeah, if more states are on, then you can't... it's the will of the people.
Well, they
it's
need,
the will of the people at that point, and you're behind the eight ball, and you're the asshole out.
Yeah.
Do you know,
at the very least, they really need to decriminalize it. You know?
Oh, I
mean,
think so.
It's just... It's ridiculous.
I think it's... And it's not going to get... I haven't felt like it's gotten worse... since it's been medical and even now recreational, I don't feel like it's gotten worse.
I don't know what the real studies are. I think these big companies will hire somebody to do a study that works in their favor every time. So I don't know.
Well, that's why I always talk about, you know, you're talking about big pharma. Well, you talk about things like alternative fuels and hydrogen cars and things of that nature. And it's like, I always said, if you can figure out a way that the gas companies can convert their gas station over to whatever the fuel of the save the planet is.
Like natural gas?
Yeah, whatever it is that doesn't, you know what I mean? If you can convert, if they can easily convert their gas stations and still make a profit, they'll be on board in a second. Otherwise, they're going to fight it tooth and nail until it dies. But with pot, let's go back to pot stocks. And I've noticed, I have some other friends who have a huge list of these things. And Where do you begin? Just because there's a hundred or so. I mean, there's a whole spider web to go through to figure out where to start. Where do you start? It's all right.
That's the Arctic.
That's a sign of a good Icelandic beer.
Oh goodness!
And you know what? It's Icelandic beer because Ed didn't burp. That was his impression of Bjork singing. The Icelandic singer.
I'll give you a little insight on how I kind of find. Obviously, when you're out there kind of looking through stocks of the day and stuff you see some of them move and you kind of look at their ticker symbol and do a little research, and then they'll have news about it, and then they have five or six other pot stocks along with the news. So then you just start tracking them. I don't want to ever buy a stock. And this is part of our strategy and learning is that you never want to really buy a stock until you start really stalking it for a while.
Stalking it, to get
to learn its characteristics. Because truthfully, it's similar to human behavior.
Yeah.
These stocks trade that way, and that's what
And something might look just so good initially, and then if you look at it long term, or if you look at the past or whatever, you go, oh, it's just...
Well, I've tried the long term thing. I mean, I got creamed by Krispy Kreme, and I mean, I got
the donut people.
Oh yeah, man. I thought that I was.
How did you get creamed by Krispy Kreme?
Tons. I bought it the wrong time.
How long ago was this?
This was back when I was in St. Louis, so that's over 12 years ago.
Yeah,
right around the second or third year.
Were they expanding at the time?
Yeah, they were expanding it, and you know, it sounded like a no-brainer.
Yeah, hot fresh donut, man.
I got crushed, but I mean, part of that was because I kind of had the all-in mentality.
Now, how did you get crushed? Because you bought it so high.
I bought a lot of it and just held, and I thought I could
hold it too long.
And then you learn. This is what teaches you. Yeah. To find the path that works. And I've tried the long term, and it's never worked for me. I mean...
Well, whatever works for you.
However,
that's what the podcast, Ed's Got My Money, is all about. But also, with the pot stocks, my question is it NASDAQ they're traded on, or is it... Where are they trading?
They're over the counter. Yeah, I would call them over the counter stocks. It's NASDAQ, basically.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's over the counter. Yeah. I don't know.
Is it so many
specifics that I can answer every question about stock, because I'm more I like individual stocks where there's options. Okay. I even short stocks, which I make a lot of money too. There's always.
So you go like 500, double your money, get the hell out.
No. I can tell you a little. Briefly, what our overall strategy is. See, I'm teaching these guys how to buy and sell. I'm not teaching them how to make $1 million.
Okay.
So you've ever heard of a 10 bagger before? You know what a 10 bagger is?
I've heard of a tea bagger.
So a 10, yeah.
Is that different?
We've all heard of them.
Yeah.
A 10 bagger is a $1,000 investment that doubles in value 10 times compounded. Okay. You compound, like for instance, 1,000, 2,000, 4,000.
Right.
If you do that 10 times, it's worth $1 million. That's the 10 bagger. So if you can find yourself a 10 bagger with a $1,000 investment, you'll make $1 million. All right. So let me give you an example of a stock that just did this within a year. One of the stocks that I just had on my show, FOT. P-H-O-T. That's the ticker symbol, not the company's name. It's the ticker symbol. And please, again, this isn't I'm not trying to tell you to buy this, because I don't recommend buying anything I talk
about.
That's
the disclaimer. Go ahead.
So if you had bought, and I wasn't, and I'm not ever saying it is. This is just an example of what can happen.
Mm-hmm.
If you had bought that at their low within the year, if you were able to get $1,000 worth of it at their lowest point and then sold it at their highest point, it had 9 doubles. You're worth $500,000.
Wow. What did it start at?
0.0001, and it hit almost 5 cents.
That's a very low.
Yes, but that's
offering.
Well, there's a lot of them that are doing. That's what I'm. Yeah, I don't recommend going that.
I mean, the offering. That's not even a cent.
It's not an offering. It's a company that's already been in place, and that's they went down to that level at one point. You get what I'm saying?
Okay.
So, but what I'm trying to say is, let me give you,
because that's a shitty offering.
Let me give you a couple examples. I bought a company called Pot Networks, POTN. Again, don't you know? I bought it 7 cents, and I started to lose my patience in January. I sold half of my stake at 7 cents because I just started getting impatient, and it wasn't even a month later it hit 90 plus cents.
Wow!
All right.
Wow.
Another one from a Canadian company, Future Farms. I bought it 16 cents, and I sold some of it at $1.60 in a month and a half later.
Holy
shit! So I'm just trying to tell you, they move very easy.
Yeah.
That means you can get your ass handed to you as well.
Yeah. But the question is, like, you know, you're 16 and you sold it at $1.60.
Not all of it. Let me give you.
I think a lot of people would get real nervous. You buy it at 16 cents when it's 75-80. You're getting real nervous and you want to get the hell out.
Well, that's part of my strategy I teach, is
how do you keep your wits about you to not jump ship?
The goal is it depends on how fast it moves, too. Yeah. So if it just drifts up, then, you know, it's a little easier to stay with it. Mm-hmm. But if you get a stock that moves 30-40% in one day, you've got to cut some of it off. Not all of it. You don't.
Well, I think if you can take out double your money and still keep it in there, then you're all right.
Yeah, one of the strategies is every time it doubles, take out half. Every time it doubles, take out half.
Because then you're always up.
Yes, absolutely.
You
know,
if you sit there and wait it out, you might be out your initial investment.
Let me give you another one. Right. I'm just trying to give you some examples of how fast these
things can move.
There's
people racing to the...
My high, I bought at 6 cents, MYHI, and during that January move when all of them were moving, and I sold some of it a week later at 42 cents.
Wow. So how come they were all moving in January? What was the deal in January?
California's law.
Passed. So that's why they
I mean, it was a no-brainer.
So it all went,
It was a no-brainer that there was going to be a lot of interest
in it. So I guess it's also interesting, if you're going to look at pot stocks, is also to keep track of which states haven't legalized and which ones have something on their election coming up that may make a big difference if that company is based out of there or that company's around there. And let's say, you know, like Nevada, if you were paying attention and Nevada passed theirs, then you go, okay, this stock's probably going to move because...
I don't do that.
You don't do that?
You know, I tried the news thing. I tried to...
No.
So here, I became a reader of the stock. So that's why I talk about stalking the stock. Because what you do is you get to read. I can tell...
Getting to know the company, how it's flowing.
I can sense when investors are accumulating it. And when you start accumulating a stock, eventually there's only one way to go because they're the ones, they know something. So for instance, instead of me knowing inside information, I use the evidence I see with the way that the stock is trading to gain that insight
myself. And you've
had
30 years where you've seen it before, so you get the sense of what's going on.
Absolutely, but you can train people to actually read the charts and get a sense of what the stocks are doing.
I suggest everybody go subscribe. Ed's Got My Money. It's on iTunes. It's on YouTube as well. And follow these guys and maybe play along.
No, the idea is just
play along. Play along with
come
you guys.
Come to the podcast and
play along with these
guys. And
you'll
see what happens. And what you'll do is you'll learn along the way. And maybe you might want to buy a stock of your own, and then this will give you the insight.
Well, what I'm saying is play along with those two guys grab $100 and play along with these two guys and see what goes on and see, you know, what's going to happen. See if Ed's full of shit. but you can also follow facebook.com/
Ed's Got My Money. Everything's Ed's Got My Money
Pot Stocks is your personal blog, which I've seen those posts. It shows the stock, it shows the ticker, it shows all that stuff.
You can go back and look at everything I've said and don't get me wrong, you're never going to be 100% right about anything in life or whatever, but
no, everything's a risk, and sometimes that's what I wanted to talk about here. But I still have you for the next 10 minutes or so. Is taking a risk, and so you've been a carpenter, and so
you're inventor,
and that's what I'm saying. Your knees were killing you, at one time in your life, and you said there's got to be a better way to save my knees. Why I'm doing this shit, and walk me through the process of inventing this little pad kneel on to save your knees.
You know, whether I'm doing some tile work down low or soldering some pipes on the ground, or even using some saw. Sometimes you don't want to do a major setup because I'm a general contractor. Mm-hmm. I do a little bit of everything. And getting down on the ground it's not just the knees that we're getting that we're hurting, but it was the bending of the foot. It would fall asleep.
Oh, right.
Okay. So, and then you can't even get up sometimes, you know, when you're down there for 20 minutes.
Yeah.
So I created a kneeling pad. I actually went out and bought some stuff and elevated the inset of the foot.
Okay.
So that was my prototype, and I realized, well, holy crap, this is pretty good. So I went online and checked everything out, and I didn't see anything like it or available. So I went and applied for a patent, and it's still patent pending.
That's a long process, isn't it?
It is a long process.
Like, how long ago did you apply for a patent?
It's been 2 years, man, and it still hasn't been 100%.
Because they have to do the research to see if there's anything else out
there.
Yeah.
And yeah. So, but I've been using it for, Boeing's bought them. I've had, I've had Boeing buy them twice, and they just contact me again and see if I had any more, you know, left. Because I don't advertise right now because it honestly costs more money. To sell them.
Yeah.
So I just let the people that I already know I'm there, and of course, free social media.
Right.
And
but you decided, hey, I'm going to try Shark Tank.
Yes, that's right. I auditioned for Shark Tank.
So how does that go about? What's the process of Shark Tank? I think a lot of people don't understand how you even get close to.
Yeah, they had the auditions at the mall. So we just waited in line, got in
how
there.
How long did you have to
and
wait?
Then, you know, you got
hour or two.
They only allow 500, so.
Oh, that's it.
Yeah, the first 500 that get
so
there.
So, did you have to be there like a day before?
No. It was about 4 or 5 hours, I think, before from the time we got there to the time we were to the casting director.
So you get the first go is you get up there. There's a casting person.
Right. Yep.
And they say, "What do you got?"
Yep. You have to do
and
a little
it
pitch
and do a little
yeah,
pitch.
Do a little pitch and.
And if they like it.
Yeah, and if they like it, they'll contact you and then tell you the next step. And then so
what was
I got,
the next step
I got
that?
To the next step, which was do about 50 pages of talking about the business and all this other stuff. And
oh, so
then
you had to type up a whole like, a business proposal?
Yeah, and then you had to prove, you know, do a lot of filling out and explaining and talk about it.
Of like how many you sold, where it's gone,
yeah,
like
everything,
manufacturing
everything.
Costs, and all that
then
stuff.
Then a 6 to 10 minute video with certain information that had to be specific about it, you know.
Right.
And so I did all that. It turned out to be a lot of work. I mean, I couldn't believe it.
That's a lot of work.
And then, you know, so I sent that off, and then lo and behold, they contacted me and said, "Hey, man, we like what you did, but we're already booked up for this season. You won't have to audition again, but we'd like to talk to you for about next season in March." So, you know, March came along, and then I had to do the same thing over again.
Well, you had to rewrite another proposal?
Yeah, everything to kind of like, you
update
know, it? Update it, yeah.
Okay.
And so it was a lot of work again, and I think I kind of blew it.
How did you blow it?
I think I, you know, because.
They liked it before. What,
yeah, they liked
the
it
difference?
Before. Well, actually, I had to send them my kneeling pad, too. So maybe they got their guys on it and, you know, maybe they just didn't want to go. But
well, I maybe, you know.
And my sales weren't, I stopped advertising because it was costing me money. I was like, you know what? Yeah. I wanted to just find out if people were interested in
right.
it. And that was my first step.
Well, I think it's, you know. Those shows, they want something that's so universal. Not that your pad isn't, but it's sort of specific in the sense of contracting.
It's just a product, not a business.
Yeah exactly. And it's something that...
That was against me, for
sure. Yeah, not every mom and dad or you know, person across the country is going to buy one to have around the house.
It's actually something that, I mean, I even thought about, you know, some Muslim prayers and stuff like that. And,
well, that'd be interesting,
and putting,
yeah.
like, a slip on it with...
Boy, dude, if you could get every... Muslim in the world to buy.
That's what I was saying. I mean, but, well, listen to this, Randy. I mean, I
know how many. There's millions and billions of them.
That
so
kneeling
can,
pad, you can
yeah.
stay down and work or whatever it is you're going to do for an hour, and when you can get right up without your feet falling asleep or them hurting.
Dude,
that's
I sense a trip to Saudi Arabia in your future. That's what I say. I think you get a suitcase full of those fucking things, and you just go to Saudi Arabia.
I think China stole my idea anyway. You know, they're going to do it.
Well, they're stealing it, right?
They're stealing everybody else's.
Yeah, they're
right.
monitoring.
That's
you.
What
so
they say.
They know. They know what you're doing. But you, I mean, your carpentry got you on TV.
Yeah.
Been a famous. What shows were you on?
I end up being. I think I'm the first winning carpenter ever on a reality show. And back in 2007, Top Design, I was on that Bravo show. It didn't last but two seasons.
Okay. I don't remember that one.
And, yeah, we...
What was the concept of it?
They had designers, and they would compete.
Okay, so like three designers?
10 or 12. 10, I think.
10 or 12?
Yeah, and then...
what are they designing? Somebody in the kitchen or something like that?
And so on, whatever. Okay. You know, they would have specifics. Right. And I happened to be one of the carpenters on there. And as these people got peeled off and sent away, at the end, the last three or four contestants were able to pick their own carpenters. And then I got picked for one of the
oh, wow.
one of them. And so I was his personal carpenter from then on out. But what happened on episode 8, there was 10 episodes, is we were doing 14 hours, man. It was crazy.
Yeah. And those shows are crazy.
I threw my thumb in the table saw. It was horrible. It popped my thumb like a balloon.
Ooh.
And so blood everywhere. Oh. Even one of the crews just almost passed out. And
really?
So I went to the. I had
is
to
your
take
thumb
me to,
left? Let me see your thumb.
Yeah. So it's, whoops.
Oh, that's all right.
So it's not. It's straight now. So I had 8 stitches. But we went to Cedars-Sinai, and they stitched me up in like an hour. And
really?
I went back and we finished the project and I won.
Wow. Now, did you try to like parlay this into like any of those other, you know, other design shows that were
yeah,
going on?
Yeah, actually, I started getting contact. So.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I did another show called First Time Design, which I was the.
Now, who contacted? Did they just know you from the show, and some of the producer called you, or yes. You didn't have any? Is there an agent for these things?
It got to where I got known for it. You
okay.
know, people started passing right. my name around because
you have a personality. You're not just a schmo doing carpentry.
Yeah, not only that, but you know, you have to be a general contractor, you have to really know how to navigate things very yeah. well and to be efficient. And
well, because those shows, they're doing that shit.
Oh, so
quick.
Fast, man!
So fast.
Yeah, and
they
case,
do. I don't want to say they cut corners, but I've heard stories where it's like a lot of it is aesthetics, and it's not necessarily sturdy.
I'll say this much that.
I know you want to bad talk the show, but... You know.
No, the brothers. I did Brother versus Brother season 1.
Okay.
So I was the general contractor on there. I mean, I'm mostly behind the scenes. And mm-hmm. I think I got my foot in one of the scenes on a ladder. I think that was the closest I got to be on TV with them. Yeah.
Because you weren't as pretty as the brothers.
That was crazy. but that one there, that was a challenge too, man. Everybody on the site got sick and...
from what? Like food poisoning?
Food poison. A lot of people got sick with food poison, and then the flu hit. It was like a back-to-back.
Wow.
Even some of the producers were out.
Yeah, I had a friend who did, I want to buy a house or some show like that, where they went around to different houses to look and see if they wanted to buy a house. And
Hunter International.
House Hunters.
I was on that show, too. Yeah.
Yeah. So they did House Hunters.
One episode of that one.
And they were looking for a house, and he was telling me about it, because a friend of his producing it. And so he's telling me, he's like, you know, they already picked out the house. Like, the house is already there. And it wasn't even the house they were going to buy. It was just they were, he's an actor friend of mine. Mm-hmm. And he was actually mm-hmm. acting. Like, the whole show was bullshit. Like,
well, no, ones I've been on are not
really. The one he was on was just like, they already picked the house. And it was mm-hmm. like, you're going to these other ones and you're just reacting.
No, I mean, some of them are, you know, there's facades where some of the hosts look like they're going to start doing all the work, but they don't. You know, I mean, then somebody comes behind. But like, for instance, I was going to get with the Brother versus Brother. And I don't know if Jonathan is a contractor. And
okay.
I just wanted to say he you know, he was one of the guys that actually knew what the hell he was doing. So
right.
Because a lot of them don't always know. They're just, like you said, they're just the face.
Yeah.
But Jonathan was pretty knowledgeable.
He knew his stuff?
In the contracting. Yeah, not bad, yeah.
Well, I heard stories of the one where they come in, they redo your house, and I don't know what the show was. I can't remember, but the couple was suing. That was the story, was the couple was suing because they came in, and they supposedly did this, you know, whole big thing on the house, but they left it worse than when they got there.
It can be ugly.
You know, it was just like... Everything they put up there, that's what I'm saying, everything was a facade. Everything was sort of fake, and it was just temporary, and it looked really good on camera. But when the cameras left, the people were left with this house that was falling apart.
If you got an eye like me, you can see some of them on the camera. They don't look too good, some of them.
Yeah. I mean, some of that work.
But that's the risk they take. They're getting their 15 minutes, a lot of these people with their homes. And if you had me working on it, I don't leave.
Well, I had a lot of friends who knew people in the Sherman Oaks area because mm-hmm. Those bar rescues was coming around, and I knew some people did bar rescue, and the people left bar rescue left, and they hated it. They couldn't stand it, what they did to their, and it was, and I think Lafrite on Ventura, they did one of those things, and the owners of Lafrite were not, big fans of what happened. But yeah, that's the reality TV. Take it. My favorite show right now, and I don't know if you've ever seen it, but is Restored.
I haven't seen it.
Oh, it's a great show. He restores like old colonials or
that would be fun. I mean,
out in Riverside and Redlands and stuff like that, there's a lot of those older homes.
Victorians.
What's my favorite type of home? And I can't think of it off the top of my head. Anyway, but he does those. It's a great show. You should check it out. But also check out Ed. Thanks for being on the show, man.
Hey, man. Thanks for having me. It was
Ed's
great.
Got My Money podcast on iTunes as well as the 30-Minute Cocktail Hour. Don't forget to subscribe.
And that's our handle on Facebook and Twitter.
And you also have Podstocks on Facebook. And you can 30MCH on Facebook. Please follow us as well. And on Twitter, we're 30MinCocktailHR. And go to 30MCH.com. I'll put up links to Ed's stuff. We'll put some more information out there. And you'll have everything you need at your fingertips to make a zillion dollars in the future. Thanks for listening. Have a great night. See ya.